Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, this is Fran Lewis. This is Book Discussion, and I'm supposed to be interviewing rheumatoidologist Dr. Glenn Parrish. It seems that something has happened, so I'm going to give it a couple of minutes because he's not here. I spoke to his publicist, and she's calling him, and we're not sure exactly what is happening. And I'm waiting for an email, but I'll give it another 5 minutes. Marcia, if you want to call in, we could chat for a while. That would be nice. Let me tell you what's happening next. Next week, if all goes well, J.J. White will be here with Prodigy Savant talking about that syndrome, which should be really very, very interesting. The picks for this week are Mark Rubenstein's phenomenal Return to Sandara, Ben Lieberman's Carnage Account, a children's book that will teach kids how to work together, Kitchen Kids, Garden Safari, and New York Times bestselling author Vincent Zandri's Moonlight Weeps. Phenomenal. Absolutely some of the best books that I've ever read. And because I love him and I think he's great, Senior Kiss, a screenplay by Stanley Director. So I'm going to give this just a couple of minutes. I'm going to tell you that MJ Magazine 5 is being set up as we speak, and that my new book, In Her Own Words, The Story of My Mom's Journey with Alzheimer's, is being edited and hopes to be published by a traditional publisher. I'm not getting any response from the publicist, so I'm going to wait another 5 minutes, and then if he's not coming on the show, I will have to say, well, we'll see what happens. Anyway, that's what's happening. Next week we have Prodigy Savant, and we have the week after, we have Kira Pequoff, who was ill 2 weeks ago, and she should be back again, I'm hoping, with No Time to Die. And then we have Marcia Adelson. I'm going to talk about the art of arbitration and mediation, and I'm going to call publicist, and I'm going to see if Dr. Glenn is going to come on the show or not. We'll just know in 2 seconds, everybody, the same time I know. Oh, good, she's not the... Well, from what I gather, I'm not sure that Glenn is going to make it. PJ, this is Fran. I'm on the air, and I need to know if Glenn is coming. I think I'll wait 5 more minutes, and then I'm just going to delete the show. And that's what I'm going to do. Okay, I get the feeling that he's not coming, and I get the feeling that I'm just going to end the show, and that's going to be not a problem. That's just the way it is. So we will see you probably, if this doesn't work out, next week at 4 o'clock for J.J. White, and the week after for Kira Pequoff, and the week after that, well, we'll see what happens. So I'm going to give it like 1 more minute, and I think we're going to call it a night because this is getting I don't know what's happening, and we're going to see. MJ Magazine is going to be dedicated to those people that overcome obstacles, and we've got many articles and book reviews, so it's still not too late for those of you that would like to submit submissions to MJ Magazine 5. MJ 6 is going to be dedicated to ordinary people that do ordinary things. So I am really sorry to my listener. Oh, here he is, I think. Hello, Glenn?
Yes, hey, how are you?
I was getting worried here. I'm talking to myself for a while.
Oh, no. Well, at least you're talking to someone intelligent.
I don't know what happened, but I'm glad you're here.
Me too. Yes, and unfortunately, I was just taking care of a patient, so I've got a few moments in between. So how are you? And thank you so much for interviewing me.
No, I'm hanging in there. And this is one topic that I really am interested in, fibromyalgia.
Oh, yes.
And yeah, there are an awful lot of authors out there that have been complaining about the syndrome. They actually have it. And I have permanent nerve damage to the left side of my chin because my real dentist, they never told me that I had a growth in my jaw for 12 years. You would think that he would have noticed it. And as a result, it's just painful, but I learned to live with it. And tomorrow I may learn to live without another tooth. I'm not sure. But they had offered
me. It's amazing what we can adapt to, isn't it?
Yeah, fibromyalgia is serious. And
it is.
I know I have
really
pain in my jaw all the time. They offered me, and I refused to take it, Lyrica, because I felt that it's not necessary for nerve damage or whatever. So what exactly is fibromyalgia? And there's no cure, I know.
Fibromyalgia, as far as we understand it, and I'll go into that in a moment too, fibromyalgia is a condition of central hypersensitization to pain. Meaning that what we all feel when we lift a pen or feel fabric or touch a loved one, that sensation comes back to our brain and we interpret it. In patients with fibromyalgia, simple things like a hug or a kiss or a squeeze may be painful. When you look at the tissue that's being touched or contacted, it's normal tissue. There's nothing wrong with the tissues, nothing wrong with the joints, nothing wrong with the muscles, but the interpretation in the brain seems to be amplified, and we don't know why. What makes fibromyalgia that much more difficult is that we don't have any metrics. There's no blood test that we can take that shows it. There's no piece of tissue that we can biopsy that shows it. There's no image that shows the changes in the tissue. It's only been in the last few years that we've begun to get a little bit of a break. There's certain neurotransmitters that seem to be a little different in terms of concentration in patients with fibromyalgia compared with the general population. There are some changes on modified MRI scans of the brain that are different in a fibro patient than they are in the general population, even those who are having pain like a fibromyalgia patient may have. So we're beginning to get a little bit of a breakthrough in terms of separating them out from the general population, because for the last 20 or 30 years, it's almost been exclusively history and certain physical findings.
Wow, it's scary.
Yeah.
It is scary.
Yeah. I've been treating this for over 25 years.
And
everything else we've gotten better at. We've gotten better at rheumatoid. We've gotten better at lupus. We've gotten better at gout. But we're not much better at fibro than we were 30 years ago. And a lot of this is because it's very difficult to change something you can't measure.
And does anybody, your book is based on somebody actually took a drug company finding a drug that might help it, and another one that would, and the Dr. Anita Thomas that finds one, creates one that's less expensive. Yeah, generic, like the story of everybody's life where no one wants to pay for anything.
So, right, exactly right.
Do people think this is a hypochondria disease? Do they think people are making it up?
Yeah, people on the outside do. People on the outside do. People on the inside, meaning the patients and those who know the patients very well, loved ones and some doctors, recognize, this is not in this person's head. This is real. I can't measure it, but it's real. You know, when I wrote the book, one critic says, well, you usually don't write a preface for a fictional novel. And I said, yeah, you don't. You know, sometimes you have to, sort of prime the reader for, what is real, what we're really dealing with right now, and where it stands in history. 100 years ago, we didn't have any treatments for rheumatoid arthritis. All you could do is just document the damage that was done. And nowadays, we've got rheumatoid arthritis corralled. Hopefully one day we'll find the same thing for fibro. And when I approached the book, I took it from the direction that we've already gone down. How did we work on rheumatoid arthritis? How do we work on lupus? How do we research other diseases that may actually have some kind of survival advantage, like, for example, sickle cell anemia? So, you know, that's sort of what informed and shaped the story that I wrote.
Well, you know, it's scary because you sit down and they have, you know, medicines or drugs to temper it, you know, ease the pain. And then I sit and I listen to the side effects and I said, I think I'll deal with the pain.
The side effects scare you. You know, anytime a doctor tells you, you know, take this medicine, what he's saying to you in not so many words is pick your poison. And, you know, one poison is the disease that you're suffering from, you know, and what mm-hmm. are the odds that that is going to cause you harm? And then I'm going mm-hmm. to give you a medicine or a drug, what are the odds that it's going to cause you harm? You know, and if the risk of side effects of a drug is 1% or 2% or even 5%, but the risk of the disease is 99%, you know, it's, you know, people still struggle with that, but it's not a difficult decision to make, you know, for many people. For some people, it's still a difficult decision to make.
Well, all I know is that when I had my surgery last year and they wanted to give me Vicodin and a few other things, I said, I'll take Bayer aspirin. I wouldn't. They was Vicodin and some other Percocet, and I said, not going to happen. And I
right.
just, you could only take so much of whatever.
Sure.
I'm living,
sure.
Yeah. Well, since this surgery, I've been living on Bayer headache because they said the pain's not going to go away. And I go, I'm just so happy. What can I say? But anyway. The Nordstrom Clinic, my favorite store to shop in Nordstrom Clinic, is the research center that you created. So you created
right.
this novel to make people aware that fibromyalgia, people, is real. And there are a lot of people out there with it, unfortunately. So
there,
did
there
you model
are,
this
are.
After a real clinic, or did you create it just
well,
for
I
the
Well, I did. You know, and you know, what I'm always very cautious about is, you know, I don't want to use a Harvard or an MIT or Yale and, you know, have them accuse me of
mm-hmm.
of either maligning them or belittling them in some way. So you make up something that's, you know, sort of right in that same level or sort of in between. You know, I did a little research on the Boston area when my daughter was looking at colleges in Boston. You know, so I went down those streets and I took note of addresses and businesses and buildings in the area, and I sort of you know, looked for vacancies that, you know, might house a clinic or a university or something like that, and I just created one.
That is brilliant. That is really. Well, how did you create Dr. Anita Thomas and the fact that, well, there were two of hers, sort of two of her.
That's right.
That was clever. That was really clever because you don't get that until often they're like, wait a minute, there's two of her.
The Anita Thomas that creates the drug is a brilliant, precocious academician, and she helps create this recombinant DNA antibody, like, you know, Enbrel or Humira or Remicade or Orencia. And this is the way these types of drugs are made. This is actually how they're made. What people don't realize is how common fibromyalgia is. It's three times more common than rheumatoid. It's five or six times more common than lupus. So this is a very common disorder. And nobody wants to talk about it.
Mm.
Nobody wants to talk about it. Doctors don't want to talk about it. Patients learn not to talk about it because, you know, coworkers and family members and relatives all think that they're hypochondriacs, they're pain seekers,
mm-hmm.
Pain medicine seekers. They're lazy. You know, they're dodging their responsibilities. You know, they get all these things because they can't see anything. You know, God bless the rheumatoid patient. They've got crippling arthritis. You can see it and you can empathize with them. But fibro, they look like everybody else.
That is scary. So what would make someone, all right, they come to Anita Thomas or they come to the Nordstrom Clinic.
Well,
of course, they discredited
her.
Well,
you know, I do a little
her.
Bit of...
Well, why
sure,
would somebody
little,
come? What?
Well, you know, again, I do a little bit of clinical research myself. So
mm-hmm.
this is how we recruit people for a clinical study when we're looking for people with a disease that we think that we can treat. So mm-hmm. we create a drug. We first check the safety of the drug, and then we find out what the best dose is, and then we look at how well the drug actually treats patients at what we think is a safe dose, and how frequent the side effects are and what they are compared to a placebo. And this is called a placebo-controlled randomized study. And this is the way most drugs are assessed. So Anita Thomas is on the team that creates this drug that treats fibro. And the creators of the drug at the Nordstrom Clinic and the manufacturers, the potential manufacturers of the drug at DNA, Decker, Nordstrom, and Anderson, they are in cahoots together. And they have fudged some of the results. And the drug is not quite as safe as they purport it to be. And it is as effective as it's purported to be, but they've done a few little things that are not quite ethical. And they're concerned that Anita Thomas won't go along with it, and they have good reason to think that. So they try to eliminate her. Well, on the first shot, they miss. And that was their biggest mistake, because now she's on the run, and she's getting some good help, and she gets some good breaks, too.
Well, she's pretty much protected by Homeland Security. But then she decides that she goes into this cafe and she meets these two young guys that she thinks can help her. And
well,
doesn't turn out great either. Boy,
no, it doesn't. You know, as an academic, you know, we're very paternalistic or maternalistic, and you know, we try to help the students who are struggling, and we just we can't resist them. You know, they're like, it's like helping children to us. So she gets involved in this research study with these three young men, and they've got a fascinating study, and it overlaps what she's researching. And that's when she comes on this discovery, something that a caveman figured out.
Well, they didn't want her, and these two poor guys, well, we won't say whatever happens to them, the poor things.
Yeah.
It's sad, but it made sense.
It is sad.
What? I mean, it's not right, but it made sense.
But you know, unfortunately, when people with power and money want something, you know, sometimes they'll stop at nothing to get it.
Well, how did these two create this their study, and how did they link this all to hominoids and in Africa? This leads all the way back.
Sure.
I did read the book three times. I did read it.
Yeah, I'm impressed. You know, I got a lot of that from sickle cell anemia. Now, I don't know if you know, but sickle cell anemia.
Yes, that is.
Yeah, sickle cell anemia is a terrible blood disease, causes awful pain and pathology. But there is a survival advantage to sickle cell anemia. Those who have the trait and those who have the disease are less likely to die of malaria. So, you know, before we had drugs to fight malaria, having sickle cell trait was actually a good thing. So in my book, the MacGuffin, or the thing that everybody's chasing, actually had a survival advantage at one point. This fibromyalgia gene actually had a benefit, and she figured it out, and she figured out how to turn it off. And that alone would be worth billions if it ever were real.
Wouldn't that be nice if that were ever real for every single disease? My God.
Yeah.
All these pharmaceutical companies that... My husband works for a huge pharmaceutical company that I don't
love.
I
know.
I don't love them. He knows I don't. And,
Well, I don't know
the
question that I always...
They don't want to pay anything. They don't want to pay for anything anymore. And now what happens, I take only one thing, big deal, nothing. And the cost of it for 90 pills a long time ago was $25. Now it's $202.
Right. Yeah, the prices on common drugs are starting to go up, and that's very distressing. But the prices on these very expensive drugs is astronomical. And, you know, I don't think it needs to be that way, but it is. But the fact that it is drives people to lengths that under normal circumstances they wouldn't take. And, you know, I think that's another driver in the story. That's very realistic, and it's very understandable for anybody who reads the story.
Well, there was a very interesting part here. Before I get to Jack Wheaton, We have to get to Jack, and we have to
get to Jack.
Lucy and a few others. But the people that were in this study was this lady Helen and this lady Anita, this other lady, and they decided, and they shared it.
So how
come the people testing, they didn't realize that they were sharing this thing?
Because
then something happened.
Yeah, it was a very sneaky thing that they did, you know, and this is the kind of thing that if patients get into their mind to do it, they can find their way around, you know, any protocol rule that protects the integrity of the study. And you just hope that the subjects, the patients involved in the study, don't do this kind of thing that these two did. But one was obviously getting the drug, the other one wasn't. And they decided that they wanted to share so that they would the one who wasn't getting the drug would know how it would feel to be cured of the disease. And in so doing, they screwed up the study. But they also exposed a side effect that otherwise wouldn't have come to light.
Well, Helen doesn't wind up in very good shape until afterwards. She winds up in
She goes through some tribulations, doesn't she?
It's scary. That's why medicine is like, if you don't have to take it, I don't. I mean, I get criticized a lot when we're going to give you this for that, and I go, I'll take nothing. I'll take an ice pack. Hopefully tomorrow I won't need one, but who knows? So who is Jack Wheaton? And he meets Anita, and she's pretending to be something she's not. So I mean, that must be hard to be so good at what you do and yet have to pretend that you're really not.
Right. Well, you know, if you think about fiction, the only other character that comes to mind who did something like this was David Banner in the old Hulk series. You know, this brilliant nuclear physicist pretending to be a janitor or a newspaper delivery boy or, you know, a restaurant busboy or something like that, hiding from his own identity and his own success. So Anita Thomas disappears from Boston and winds up in Atlanta posing as an intern. Now, this is somebody who's already achieved the level of associate professor, you know, regionally known, perhaps on the verge of being nationally known, you know, for her her discoveries and her papers and her work. And she has to play the role of someone who just graduates from medical school. So she's biting her tongue, you know, every day.
It's so amazing. I mean, you have to like her. Now, you have the sneak. The fact that so many of them fell for this one, Lucy, who supposedly we don't want to get too into her, but oh my God.
Yeah.
And then there's Quirk.
That Quirk is a piece of work. But Lucy is another little thing. She's a character who, you know, I think I put a lot of work into. And the thing about Lucy, she's bad. She's really, really bad. But she's also, you know, a sad story. This is one of our vets. This is one of our best. This is somebody who might have been special forces, trained to do a job incredibly well. And in the field, that's very valuable. But when she comes back here, what can you do with those kinds of skills? Okay? So you wind up doing the things that you were trained to do. You know, and the legitimate uses of those kinds of skills are very few and far between. So, unfortunately, this Quirk takes advantage of her in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are so many people, I don't want to get into all of them, I'm sitting here, that get eliminated because of this. They eliminate.
It's got a high body count.
there's a big, huge body count here.
Yeah.
Because they want to make sure that nothing stands in their way, and no one finds out exactly what they do.
Yeah.
So how does
Quirk does not leave. Orson Quirk does not like to leave loose ends, and he doesn't. He wants to make sure that if he goes down, everybody goes down with him.
Well, you know, sometimes it's fun to be on the side of the bad guys, but not in this case.
How many people
are affected by this disease? I mean, and how does Jack get embroiled in this? And I don't think he really wanted Anita at first. And he just sort of, like, gets stuck in this.
You know, he's sort of an interesting character, and of course he's going to be, you know, the main string character as the series goes on. But Jack Wheaton is a 28-year-old senior resident, and you know, he's a victim of being a 28-year-old guy. You know, he's single, he's kind of on the make, he's working, you know, 80 hours a week. You know, he's you know, what a lot of guys are. You know, he's not driven by, he's the big head, he's driven by the other one. And, you know, so, you know, he's like a puppy dog. And, you know, every time somebody, you know, walks by with a certain look, you know, his head turns. But he's really into Anita. And he's into Anita for so many different reasons, not just because of the way she looks, which is what, of course, you know, often hooks a guy. Mm-hmm. But he gets to really respect her, admire her, and you know, he sees her heart, and you know, she has a great deal of respect for him for a number of reasons. Also,
there are a lot of people, though. The drug is FMDS 400. People, that's a drug you don't want to take.
That's
and
right.
Glazer Pharmaceutical.
That's right.
Good. You tell you, I tried to do my studying here.
You really did.
I'm trying.
You really did.
This book caught me by surprise. What happened was, your publicist that I love a lot, PJ. She's amazing. Seriously,
she really is. I have been.
She really is
so
good. She works
her
tail off. She's good. And she makes sure that I always work mine, and I don't get paid. What can I say? And she emailed me, would anybody like to read this? Then she emails me, you want to read it right now? And I looked at the back, I looked at the blurb, and I said, yeah, this sounds different. You know, I've read over 4,000 books in 3 years that I've been doing
good Lord.
This. Yeah, too many. And that's my mother's fault. She made me read 10 books a week when I was younger, take notes, and actually understand what I was reading. She drove me crazy.
That is
but
a great
okay.
habit to have. I wish more people had that habit.
Not only that, I had to take the book and have index cards next to me to have character, plot, and setting. So I said to my husband, I said, no wonder I'm so good at doing book reviews. I'm so good at, you know, departmentalizing and taking things apart. And my aunt was a reading specialist, like I was a reading specialist, and she would say to me, look past the words on the page and see if you could figure out the message that the author is trying to give you. And I said, I know I'm a reading and writing specialist by profession. I work with kids with learning disabilities in reading and writing. Yes, that's what I did. So I said, okay, I can actually do this. But the funny part was the very first book they asked me to review was a cookbook, and Fran doesn't know what the size of a knob on a stove is. Forget it. But the thing came out so hysterical that I don't know why they keep getting me to do this, and I've got like about 40 inside to read. But when I saw this book, I said, this is different. It's not a typical, oh, who did it and got killed and there's no substance. Or there's going to be, you know, a police department investigation, and it's going to be like, okay, that's not right, that's wrong. So this really caught my attention, especially the Dr. Dasher, poor thing. He should have stayed away from poor thing. I mean, there's an awful lot of people in this story that get bumped off because they're in the wrong place with the wrong person.
Sure. And, you know, in the future, I don't think that I'm going to take out as many people in my stories. But I think that everybody who went in this story was a victim of some psychological pathology. Lucy is unhinged, and there's no other way of describing it. But she is so for reasons, and we've seen this in the news on many an occasion. You get somebody who just goes over the edge, and you know they start taking out people for no reason. Well, she didn't take them out for no reason. Usually there's a trigger, and she's got an underlying disease that affects her self-image, and that comes out when she and Jack get together. He discovers it accidentally at the end of their soiree. But, you know, you can see how that might shape a young woman, you know, over the course of her life. People are very superficial in their judgments. This is someone who, you know, has been to war, served our country, and been trained to do horrible things. And she comes back and finds that she's being asked to do these horrible things again. And to her, it's second nature. She's good at it. She's very, very good at it. but she's being used. And she realizes she's being used and tries to escape, and that's her downfall.
Well, once you get into the kind of web that she was in, she was really caught, forget it.
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah, she was really.
And you know,
caught,
it's hard to feel.
It.
It's really, really hard to feel sorry for Lucy, but.
I don't feel. I did not feel sorry for her.
Yeah.
I kept thinking that she was gonna keep getting away with more and more and more, and I was glad that you know, in a lot of stories that I've read, you know, the bad person, you know, they leave them over for the next book, and
right.
I'm saying like they should have killed them off at the first chapter. I mean, yeah. And then I'll say, okay, well, maybe the author is going to bring back some of the characters. We hope, we can only pray. So there's her partner that she's with, who Jason, who's completely off his nut. But let's talk about, the title is really, I know Renaissance means rebirth. I also know, because my mom took Coumadin, that she couldn't take aspirin because it's a blood thinner. I learned the definition
right.
of so many things. INRs, protons, and all the
oh, gosh,
all
yeah. Yeah, more than you really want to know. So
why
the
title?
The title, The Renaissance of Aspirin, you know, I like the way the title flowed, first of all. But, you know, back in the early 80s, we thought aspirin was dead. We had ibuprofen, we had naproxen, we had Indocin. These were more effective at treating the pain. They had to be taken less often. They were a little less toxic in terms of bleeding risks. So, you know, who's going to take bare aspirin if you can get these better drugs? Well, then somewhere in the early 80s, we discovered that none of these drugs prevented platelets from clumping together as well as aspirin did, and aspirin became a first aid drug for people having heart attacks or strokes.
Mm.
And that was the rebirth or the renaissance of aspirin, something very, very simple coming back after, you know, all the bells and whistles of the fancier drugs fail.
Well, my mom, my sister died recently, unfortunately. She was really
young. I'm sorry to hear that.
And she had a massive heart attack, but she didn't have heart problems. It was really weird. My mom had Alzheimer's, but she had she used to have high blood pressure until her daughter, this one, monitored her diet and got rid of all the salt, and then she didn't have the problem anymore. And my father weighed 400 pounds, so he died of a stroke. So when this all happened, they said to me, "You have to watch your weight." I go, "Where am I watching it?" I said, "I'm skinny now." And when my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, I think I weighed 190 pounds. Now I weigh about 109, and I'll never gain it back. But the doctor specifically said, "You have to watch what you eat. You have to watch your pressure. You have to watch this." I said, "Why don't I just stand in the mirror and watch myself?" And I have low blood pressure, to the point that you get paranoid, to the point that if my blood pressure goes over, it's like 92 over 68, 101 over whatever, that if it goes up past 110, I go, "Wait a minute, I better stop eating. I'm doing something wrong." And then they'll say to me, "Well, it's okay to be 120 over 80. I go, "No, it's not, because I'm going to get a headache," or whatever. So I guess every person is different, and aspirin.
Yeah, everybody has a threshold for, you know, the risks they're going to take in life. But, you know, I tell everybody, and I say this often to my patients, none of us are getting out of this life alive. So, you know, you do the things that are sensible to do to maintain your health. But being, you know, preoccupied with it to the point of obsession, I don't
think people
that's
like
healthy
that.
Either. Yeah, I don't think that's healthy either.
There are people like that, but I always wondered. I mean, I know baby aspirin is 81 milligrams.
Correct.
I did my stuff here. But
you did.
People, well, the pain in my face requires, unfortunately, more, which is not good because I've invested in Bayer headache, which does work to a point. And the other stuff, ibuprofen can kill your stomach, so forget that. And Aleve, I'm not sure about. So I don't know what people would think would be the best pain reliever if you lose a tooth or you have something like that, and you don't want to take all these medicines that, you know, are really whatever. What would you do?
Well, the challenge is that these all do work, and it depends on one's threshold for tolerating pain. You know, and there are some people who, you know, can have a tooth extraction and they can take Tylenol, and they're satisfied with that. There are some that if you gave them morphine until they went into a coma, you know, what you'd hear from them, you know, as they're going to sleep from the morphine is, God, this pain is killing me. You know, so, you know, everybody else is on that spectrum somewhere. So, you know, it's a personal choice. And, you know, my philosophy is, thank God that we have those choices.
That's true. But you know what? A lot of doctors, not you, but a lot of doctors prescribe stuff just because patients say, well, I don't feel well, you know, and I need something and I have to have something.
Right.
And I'm just the opposite, where I'll say, what does it do? And if it makes me tired, I'm not taking it, because Fran has to read. And Fran has to write her next. Fran just wrote her next. I have to announce this. This is, like, so exciting. And I have to get people to read it before it gets published. There's a traditional publisher that very may well take my new book. It's called In Her Own Words, and it's my mother's journal, her journey from the moment she found out she had Alzheimer's till the day she died.
And that sounds like a terrific book.
It's interesting. My editor is editing
like
it. I hope she's
journey.
Putting it in chronological order. It's her own words. It's stories. It's all true. It really happened. She really did say all the wild and crazy things that she did. And it's all the stages of Alzheimer's, which I feel people need to know about. Caregiver, as my mother's caregiver for 12 years, I did it. And just poems and stuff that we created about her. And I think I might ask some of my family members, if they remind themselves that, you know, like, it would be nice to help. So for their thoughts, if they could tell say something to my mom right now, what would they tell her? And she was a force to be reckoned with. Like I said, she made me read 10 books a week and take notes. And her other thing was, if I didn't get 100 on a test, if I got 99, I had to write the test over till I got 100, the whole thing.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, talk about pressure.
There was, but you know what?
Yeah, you're a better person.
I graduated with 3 master's degrees, and only one was a 3.7. The other two were 4.0s, because I heard my mother in my head, you will get A's, or you will have a... She did. So those people that are on... would take a drug like Lyric or something for fibromyalgia, would aspirin be part of it also, or would aspirin help it?
Well, aspirin is an anti-inflammatory medication, and it also has some blood thinning effects, which have you know, may be helpful for a different reason. But aspirin also helps reduce fever. It has a lot of medicinal properties too, and it's been used all over the world in different forms. You know, extract of the willow bark. You know, and in some cultures, it's made into an elixir or a soup or a tea. And you know, it's, you know, it was primarily in this country that it was isolated, extracted, and made into a pill. You know, so it's got a lot of benefits, but as far as managing fibro, it's probably not the best choice. You know, and we don't know what the best choice is for fibro. You know, we have some drugs that work very well. They don't work perfectly, and they don't work on everybody. And some people don't tolerate the drugs very well. So, you know, we have a lot of challenges with this disease. You know, fortunately, there are some physicians and medical scientists that are studying this. You know, we have not given up on fibro. That's the other message of my book. We have not given up on this. It's not very apparent, but we have not given up on this. And even the pharmaceutical companies, you know, they happen to be the villain in this story. But, you know, they actually are contributing to the progress in management of disease and the improvement of health. So, you know, they've got an interest. Of course, it's driven by, you know, by gain, you know, financial gain. But, you know, the outcome is you have another choice, another product that you potentially can treat this very painful disease with.
Yeah, it is a very painful disease. One of the authors that I'm very close friends with, I've never met her, but we, you know, private message each other and everything, and I know she's suffering from fibromyalgia. I also know that she can't afford the medication, so it makes it even harder.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I know that. I take Nexium, which is that's it. That's not bad. Yeah, it's one pill once a day for whatever. It does have its own side effects. It does kill your bones, but what the heck.
Right.
I'd rather not have heartburn and whatever, and I, but then I'm one of those people that I don't eat what I'm not supposed to. But it's like, it, I, and yet they came out with something, and I don't know what would happen. Let's say they came out with Lyrica over the counter, or they can, they came out with Nexium over the counter, but it's not the same company. So I'm sticking with the prescription because I'm not sure if the
I'm not sure if it's the same.
They're making 20s, and I take 40s, and it's a different company, different drug company. I'm saying, like, I don't know. So when are you going to bring Jack and Anita back for the next one?
I'm certainly going to bring Jack back. Whether or not I'm going to bring Anita back, well, that's to be seen. I got to. I'm a mystery writer. I got to give you a little taste. I got to give you a little tease.
You have to promise me that I'm going to get it. I'm going to get the book to review.
Fran, I will make sure that you get an advance copy and get
good.
A little feedback from you.
I'll even advance you a blurb for your back cover, because I do those.
Okay, great.
One of the authors surprised me, Mary Martin Nightcrossing. She's amazing.
Uh-huh.
The Alexander Wainwright, and she put my blurb, she put my quote, I had no idea, on the front cover of her book. So when she sent me the book, I said, I guess I have to move you to the top of my list. I had 47 books, and I said, anybody that puts me on the front cover of your book, oh, well, yeah, you.
Well, Fran, but, now I know how to bribe you.
That's exactly right. Not a problem. When I went to the Thriller Fest, I was invited by Larry Thompson.
Oh, were you there? I was there also.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I was there. I was a little blonde, spiky thing that when Steve Berry walked out, he said, I know that voice. That's Fran Lewis, because he's been on my show. I met John Land. I met Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child. They just sent me their book to review, but you can't get them on an interview, but what the heck, at least I get the book. I've got Tess Gerritsen coming on December 23rd.
Tess Gerritsen.
Yeah,
you got to tease Tess. The Renaissance of Aspirin is a product of an assignment she gave me once.
Really? Oh my God!
Yes,
just,
I was in Michael Palmer in her course 4 years ago, and Tess gave us a homework assignment. She says, "I want you to come up with two characters who have romantic or sexual tension but don't get together." And I says, "I can do that." And I went back to my room and I wrote about Jack and Anita. And it was first one paragraph, then two, then one page, then two. I said, I can make a whole book out of this. And that's what I did.
She was the first ever New York Times bestselling author that answered my email by herself and said she would be on my show.
I absolutely love Tess Gerritsen. She, you know, when I had my woes about some of my writing experiences.
She's amazing,
she
isn't she?
She sat down with me, and she took the time, and, you know, she gave me some tough love. And, you know, I think she's an absolutely wonderful person, as well as such a wonderful writer.
Yeah,
and creative
book,
talent.
No Time to Die Again. It's called Die Again, and it's coming out in December. And she's going to be on my new show, which just started last week. I did the first one, and November 20th, I'm doing this. It's called Let's Write, and it's the art of writing a novel. This one on the 25th, we're going to talk about how authors know exactly that second when they created the conflict between their characters and how they create that conflict and keep it going and solve it and setting and how setting comes into play. I'm doing another on January 27th for anyone that ever wrote true crime. I've got Stephen Shuker's Poison. That's a scary book about Herman Billick. He was wrongly accused of poisoning a whole six people in a family with arsenic poisoning. And the story itself is bone-chilling. And Larry Thompson wrote something that I have to still get, True Crime. And February, I haven't picked one yet. But it's called Let's Write, and it's the art of writing different parts of the novel. So whether it's conflict or setting or storyline, or the first one was how did you create, what was the inspiration for your main character? Go know that John Lesquard modeled Dick Miss Hardy after himself. as a bartender.
Well, Fran, I've never had a chance to take in your show before, but you've got me hooked now. I'm riveted. And if you know, when you get a chance to talk to Tess again, please give her my regards. I haven't seen her in a couple of years, but she is responsible for this book, good or bad.
I put the notes right in my thing. So before we go, if Jack and Anita, this is one of my weird questions, could speak to our listeners, what lessons would they say that they hope people learn from reading this book? And everybody better read it.
Well, Jack, I think his parting thoughts would be, don't judge a book by its cover, and look before you leap. I think Anita's parting words would be careful when you start digging, because you may find something that you can't bury back again. And and sometimes you got to meet the right person at the right time in life to really make hay.
Well, you just never know. You're right. So where can everyone learn more about you? And
I have a website, therenaissanceofaspen.com. And I also have a website, GwenParis.com, and you can learn a little bit about me on either of those. And I am on Facebook as well. And one of my causes is fibromyalgia. And, I've been saying this, all year. I'm going to donate 50% of the net profits toward fibromyalgia research and support.
That is so amazing. Yeah, I donate quite a bit of the proceeds from my magazine, if you'd like to write an article on fibromyalgia. My fifth edition, MJ5 is, well, the magazine's in memory of my sister. And it's basically book reviews, current articles in medicine, current articles in the news, sports. I can do whatever I want because I'm the editor and owner of the magazine.
There you go.
And this first one, MJ5, which is not out yet, is going to have for people that overcame obstacles. And the books are dealing with overcoming obstacles. And on MJ6, when I get started, and it's going to come out in February, I hope, ordinary people that do extraordinary things. So
that sounds wonderful.
And if you would like to...
I can't wait.
If you would like to write an article on fibromyalgia or whatever, I think that...
Just give PJ the details, and I'd love to.
That would be fantastic. So I'm going to email PJ to email you to tell you how to get in touch with me.
Terrific.
Thank you so very much for today. I appreciate it.
Well,
and
Fran,
I can't wait to read what happens next.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Fran, and it was wonderful meeting you. You take
care
and keep reading.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night. Bye-bye.